Leviticus 21. No, sorry, Leviticus 22. Leviticus 22. 22:10. That's where we're going to pick it up today. So the beginning of Parshas Emor speaks almost exclusively about Kohanim and Kohanim privilege and the responsibilities that come along with those privileges. One of the privileges that Kohanim have is the consumption of truma. Truma is special food which is separated or designated from the harvest that comes from the holy land of Eretz Yisrael. So this is how it goes. Basically, when the harvest is brought in, 2% approximately is set aside for the Kohen and the holiness that rests on all the things that grow from the land of Israel are now kind of focused onto that small percent. That food becomes sacred and holy. Only the Kohen is allowed to eat it, and the Kohen has to eat it in a state of ritual purity. The verses prior to the verses we're learning today detail the Kohen's state of purity that has to be attained in order for the consumption of the Truma. Before one consumes Truma, a special bracha is recited. Asher kedishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu, but it's not just Asher kedishanu, it's Asher kedishanu b'kedushato shel Aharon. It's God who has sanctified us, says the Kohen, with the holiness of Aaron, and that is the privilege and the responsibility and the opportunity of Kahuna. And because the Kohen has a special neshama, the Kohen is able to eat special things and accomplish something unique and something special on a spiritual level with it. So now, in verse 10, the Torah tells us this is all good for Kohanim, which means somebody who is born from a father who is a Kohen, from a union, from a marriage that's sanctioned for Kohanim by the Torah. However, the Torah comes along and says, "V'chol zor, any stranger, lo yoichal kodesh, he should not eat any of this sacred food." So who is a zor? Who is a stranger here? Anybody who's not a Kohen. He's strange to Kahuna. Toshav Kohen, the one who is living, a resident in the Kohen's house or household. Socher, a hired hand for the Kohen. Lo yochal kodesh, she should not be eating this holy and sacred food. So let's take a look in Rashi and try to understand what's being conveyed to us. Number one, it says, lo yochal kodesh. He shall not eat that which is considered holy. So anybody who is not a Kohen is automatically going to be a stranger to this pursuit, to this activity. And so we say, ubetruma ha'parto medaber. Rashi tells us when we say kodesh, kodesh means holy. Holy can be a lot of things. There are a lot of kinds of food that are called holy in the Torah, especially when we deal with Beit HaMikdash and Beit HaMikdash reality. But here the emphasis is on layechel kodesh, is on truma. That's what we refer to when we say holy here. Shekol ha'inyan diberba. How do I know? Rashi says. You ask me. It doesn't say truma. If it's truma, it should say truma. It says kodesh. So he says because all these verses, prior and subsequent, are all speaking about truma. And since everything here is discussing truma, specifically before we talked about truma explicitly and mentioned it openly, in verse 7, in fact, I think it says even the word truma. No, but it's very explicit that we're talking here about Truma, and because it's explicit that we're talking about Truma, it's self-understood that lo yechal kodesh, when the Torah, after the Torah comes along, it speaks of the Kohen's responsibility, his opportunity to eat Truma, chazar, one who's a stranger, should not eat. And then the Torah comes along and says, but a toshav Kohen and a sacher also shouldn't eat. Well, you just said every stranger. So why would I think that somebody who resides in a Kohen's house can eat Truma? He doesn't become a Kohen by residing there. What is even the question here? So Rashi says, we're not referring to a Kohen who's living in another Kohen's house. The Kohen doesn't need a home in order to eat Truma. As long as he's a Kohen, he can eat it. But Toishavai Shel Kohen Usechidei. We speak about two individuals who you might think had become absorbed into the Kohen's household and reality, and therefore the same privilege and responsibility that would apply to the Kohen would also apply to the members of his household. Sometimes it does, as you'll see. But here the point that's being made is Fikach Toshav Ze Nakud Pasach. This the word Toshav is vowelized with a patach. It doesn't say Toshav with a komatz. It says Toshav Lefi Shehu Dovok, because it's connected to the word that follows. Toshav Kohen. not Toshav Kohen, because if we say Toshav Kohen, it would mean a resident who is a Kohen. It says Toshav Kohen, the resident of the Kohen. So who are we speaking about? Ve'ezehu Toshav, who is this? It says Rashi, Zen Nirza. This refers to the person who was sold into an indentured period of labor. In the Torah, we hear that a person who steals from somebody else and can't make restitution, instead of going to a prison, where now it's we're discovering that the United States government, for example, pays more money to feed and house prisoners and keep them secure that they shouldn't escape, pays more money than the government pays for people to go to Ivy League schools. Like, it's spending a lot of money on this. And does the victim walk away any happier? Yeah, the victim maybe has sweet revenge that the person who stole from them is now incarcerated. But the poor old lady who was bilked out of her savings by somebody who lied and cheated still doesn't have the money to pay her mortgage or rent. So what was accomplished? Absolutely nothing. So the Torah comes along and says, the person who lost the money has to get restitution. How are we going to do this? Very simple. We're going to sell that individual into a period of what's roughly translated as slavery. What it really means is indentured labor. So you have no rights, meaning you can't quit. You can't say, I don't like this work. Give me some work that I like. I don't do floors. I don't do windows. You do whatever you're told to do, because your previous rights have been parked at the door when you entered into this as a period of indentured labor. Now, having said that, it doesn't mean that your new master has the right to abuse you in any way, shape, or form. In fact, quite to the contrary. The code of human rights, as we know it in the Western world today, is lifted directly from the Torah's description of how you treat this quote-unquote slave. It's not really much of a slave. But he doesn't have the ability to say, I quit. And he doesn't say, that's not my work of choice. You'll do what you're told to do, when you're told to do it, and that's the end of the story. Now, one of the things that happens to this Jewish man who has been sold into a period of indentured labor so that his victims can be indemnified, one of the things that happens to him is his master can also get him to sleep with whoever he wants in order to create, to sire children, which might not be a very savory kind of activity for somebody. Tough luck. Your master can do that. So he says, I got some maidservants in the home. They're not particularly Jewish, these maidservants. You're going to take one of those maidservants, you're going to live with them, you're going to sire children with them, and then move on. And then 6 years later, goodbye, Charlie, sayonara. They're not your children. They belong to the household. They belong to the compound, if you will, the company. And let's say that this guy was a loser, and he never really kind of was able to make life work for him. The only way he was paying his bills was by stealing. And here, all of a sudden, he's tasted an honest day's work. Puts in a day's work. And you know what? He even likes the maidservant he's living with. He says, I want to stay here. So if he wants to stay, he can have his ear pierced, and then he stays on until the Jubilee. Once the Jubilee comes, you got to go free. You can't stay anymore. This way, he doesn't have to worry about getting fired. He doesn't worry about losing his job. He has perfect job security. He knows he's got a bed over a roof over his head. He's got a bed to sleep on. He's got food every single day. In fact, the rules are that the same Sealy Posturepedic mattress the owner uses, he has to buy for the worker as well, for this indentured laborer. So he's living well. See, he's never lived in such a wealthy house. He lived in poverty before. Now he's living in a wealthy house. He's eating the same caviar. I mean, kosher, of course. Whatever. Same food. Life is good. He wants to stay on. So you would think that this Toshav has become absorbed into the Cohen's family. He has kind of surrendered his own identity. People no longer call him Yankel Otadris. Now they say, the Cohen's guy. He introduced himself as such. He doesn't represent himself anymore. So he's a Nirza. And he's Al Shahu Koniloi. He is acquired by him, to use very graphic terminology. He has become part of the residuals of the Kohen. So we would think that as a residual of the Kohen, he is now officially like a Kohen. He's become subsumed into the Kohen's reality. Torah says not the case. Even though this is going to be the case ad hayovel until the Jubilee, nonetheless, he is still not considered to be part of the Kohen's household, and he still cannot eat the truma food that everybody else is eating. Yes, it's true that he has to eat the same level of food as the Kohen. No, it's not true that he can eat truma. Ve'ezehu sachir, who is the sachir? Zeh hakani kinyan shanim. This is the one who might be purchased for an amount of years, which generally speaking means only 6 years. He's yoytze b'sheish. At the end of his six-year tenure, he goes free. Ba'akosav limed chakan. The Torah is giving you this information. Ein gufoy koner la'adoin of la'echol b'trumasei. even though he has left behind his previous identity, even though he has now become subsumed, so to speak, into the Kohen's reality, nonetheless, he's not owned by the Kohen. I mean, he really is kind of owned by the Kohen because the Kohen can get him to do whatever he wants. But nonetheless, no, he's still considered to be independent from a spiritual or Torah perspective, the Chama perspective. He's still considered to be independent. He's not owned by the Kohen. And as such, he cannot consume the Truma food. Now, the Rambam wants to suggest that the Toshav is a person who could even not be Jewish, but he's not your typical Eved Kanani. He's not your typical non-Jewish servant, that he ultimately is there until the Jubilee. However, who might be subsumed into the Kohen's reality? Verse 11 says, V'chohen ki yikne nefesh, the Kohen, when he acquires a soul, kinyan kaspehu, then he becomes fully acquired by him. He becomes his possession. Hu yoichal bai, that person can eat. The Yilid Beisai, and those who are born into his household, Heim Yoichlu B'lachmai, they can eat the Kohen's food. What is this talking about? A regular person, a Jew who's not born Kohen, can't eat Kohen food. End of story. And now you're telling me the Kohen buys him. No, the Kohen buys him. He can eat the Kohen's food. How is that possible? So we speak here, Kohen Ki Yikna Nefesh, says Rashi, Be'eved Knani Shekone L'Gufei. There was once upon a time a concept of slavery. Slavery did not mean beatings. Slavery did not mean abuse. Slavery did not mean anything harsh. Slavery meant that you couldn't quit. That you were part, this was your job. You had job security. You were treated with like a mensch. You were treated fine. But you could no longer have the freedom to do as you please. You do what your master says. If he decides that you're good at doing windows, then you will do windows. If he decides that you need to do dishes, you'll do dishes, etc., etc. So whatever it's going to be that the homestead's going to need, that's what you're going to do. For when? For how long? For posterity. This is talking about somebody who is not Jewish, who now enters into this covenant of servitude. And this covenant of servitude, what happens is that he actually becomes partially Jewish. He goes to the mikveh. And he accepts upon himself basic mitzvahs. The mitzvahs that he has to perform are, as a rule, to avoid the negative mitzvahs of the Torah. The 365 things that the Torah proscribes and prohibits, he's not allowed to do them. So he can no longer eat pork. He can no longer marry whoever he wants. There's a lot of things he can't do. He doesn't have the positive mitzvahs. He doesn't eat matzah on Pesach. He doesn't put on tefillin. But he can't violate the Shabbat. He doesn't have to make kiddush, but he can't violate the Shabbat. He's part of the Kohen's household. So essentially, you would call it half-Jewish, even though we usually say he can't be partially Jewish. Just so you can't be half pregnant. But nonetheless, in this kind of case, you actually could be partially Jewish. That's called an Eved Kanani. The Eved Kanani, Kanani here is a euphemism, because there were no Canaanites left. But the Eved Kanani is a euphemism. The Eved Kanani is according to Lugufi. We speak here about a person whose origin was not Jewish, who has become absorbed into the Jewish people because he now joined this Jewish household. And because he joins the Jewish household, the Torah says, Hu Yechol Bei. He now assumes the Kohen's identity. Now what happens, incidentally, when this person is set free? The person becomes fully Jewish. He becomes a full convert. And interestingly, there's an interesting halacha about this person. If he decides he's a real lover of Zion, and they're living in Bavel, in Iraq, in Kurdistan, wherever the Jews used to live at some point, he runs away from his owner to make Aliyah. He wants to live in Israel. So if he does that, if he's a lover of Zion, we force his master to free him, and he becomes a full citizen of the Holy Land, and nobody is ever allowed to taunt him for his background. And in the event that the master decides that either he can't afford these mouths to feed anymore, or for whatever reason this person has done some very special favor and he appreciates his service, he wants to set him free, there's actually like a get, like a bill of divorce, similar to the bill of divorce that we invoke to sever or to dissolve a marriage, and the covenant is dissolved. He's no longer part of the Kohan's household, for example, or the Yisrael, whoever the Jew is, and he or she goes free. And they go free, becoming fully Jewish. They become like a full convert, and it's prohibited for us ever to taunt or to make fun or to remind them of the past. They have to be treated with utmost dignity and respect. So the interesting thing is that this non-Jewish person who becomes Jewish, because he's becoming Jewish under the aegis and household and ownership of the Kohen, he becomes like a Kohen. He's not a Kohen, of course, but he's able to eat to the Kohen. So the metaphor that I like to use is you can have your own IP address, and then sometimes when you can't, for whatever reason, get online, you can hotspot off somebody else's iPhone. So when you're hotspotting off somebody else's iPhone, who's paying for the data? The person whose iPhone is online. And if there would be some kind of corruption in whatever it is being downloaded, what would happen? It would automatically go from the phone that's the host phone that you're hotspotting off, because your connection is only through the other device. You don't have an independent connection. So here's a person who he's not Jewish. Because he's not Jewish, doesn't have a Yiddish neshama. Because he doesn't have a Yiddish neshama, his connection, his Wi-Fi connection to God, is not coming through his own Jewish ID or IP. What's it coming through? It's coming through the Kohen's home. And because it comes to the Kohen's home, he's downloading the same feed. And because the Kohen is able to eat Truma, he, as a non-independent agency within Judaism, as one who is just an extension of the Kohen's reality, is able now to do what the Kohen can do. It's as if he has Kohanic privileges. Of course, once he would go free, which means that he'd become fully Jewish, what happens? Then he can no longer eat Truma. Why? Because now he's a regular Jew, and now he gets his own IP address. Once he gets his own neshama, that's it. That's over. The Kohen business is finished. So this person, who's not even technically Jewish, can eat Truma. It's unbelievable. I can't eat Truma, you can't eat Truma, he can eat Truma. A person who's not a Kohen eats Truma, he gets Kares. It's worse than eating Chametz on Pesach. But a person who's a part of the Kohen's household, he can eat Truma. And Yelid Beisei, Elu Bnei Shvachas, these are his children. And the larger Kohen's household are also included. Ashes Kohen, what about the wife of a Kohen? Nice Jewish girl, born an Israelite, born a Levite, marries a Kohen, Eicheles Betruma, she eats Truma. Why? Because marriage modifies the soul of a woman. A woman's soul is modified through marriage. And if because there was a marriage, she married a Kohen, now her soul is modified and she has a new, so to speak, identity. And that's the identity through which the husband she married, she becomes like a Kohen. And of course, this is also, the same is true with regards to the children and the rest of the family. So this is the halacha, and this is the reality of Truma and indentured labor, which is not relevant in today's day and age. It's not relevant in today's day and age, number one, because we have the Truma. Number two, because the whole notion of indentured labor doesn't exist in today's day and age.
And from a practical point of view, though, his whole sustenance is through his livelihood, is through Truma, right? So how could you be deprived? Like, how could it be anything but that?
Here's the thing. Practical considerations are not oftentimes relevant. In other words, but all I have is Truma. So find other food. This is your servant? This is your indenture? Figure it out. What do you do in a time when somebody's ritually impure, which happens, could happen very often? You don't eat Truma. Okay, so then. Just because, you see, when it's the Jewish indentured laborer, he can't eat it. Why? Because he doesn't lose his IP address. Even though he loses his rights to quit. But the non-Jewish fellow, he does, so to speak, have that privilege. The Kohen master is responsible to feed them both.
So if he has an Eved Ivri, he wouldn't be...
An Eved Ivri can never eat Truma. That's what we learned about. That's correct. That was the first pasuk we learned. The second verse is talking about an Eved Kanani. And Eved Kanani can eat Truma. As long as he's the Eved Kanani of a Kohen. So this is the business of people who are not born into a certain reality or inducted into a certain reality, right? He's like an unregistered alien. Doesn't have his own citizenship, so to speak. His citizenship comes under the aegis of somebody else's citizenship. He's under a different agency, and therefore he'll be allowed to eat Truma. Okay, so let's take a look now in the Birurim book, in Siman Gimel. The Rebbe gives us a marvelous insight into something which is extremely relevant and really not well understood. What we learned about is not technically relevant. Of course, Torah ideas are ever relevant, but on a literal level, on a legal level, the circumstances we talked about are no longer dealt with. We have no Truma, we have no Avdus. That's just the reality. However, this jurisprudence gives us a window into something which we do on a regular basis, in fact, daily. Al yesoid halacha zu, based on this halacha, nitin levayres divrei gemara, page reish tzadik tes. Siman Gimel. Reish tzadik tes. So based on this halacha, it is possible now to understand words of the gemara, which this gemara is found in Masechet Brachot, page 35. Very famous words, which influence the way we do lots of things, like eat. The Gemara says, quote, Kol hanene Me'olam hazeh b'lei bracha. Anybody who partakes of, ingests, and enjoys something from this world, the material world, without a blessing, ki'ilu mal b'kotche shemayim. It's as if he were to have abused that which was given for holy and sacred purposes. So kodshim means something which is sacred, designated, it's taken out of circulation. It's put aside as something which is unique and special. And kodshim, the halacha is that kodshim are reserved for kohanim only. And the Gemara comes along and says that if you, an ordinary Jew, were to eat breakfast but didn't make a bracha first, in fact, you drank a coffee but didn't make a bracha first, you're violating the holiness of that which Hashem created. It's as if you're abusing something which doesn't really belong to you. How do we know this? Where did he come up with this idea? Shenemar, for it is written in the book of Psalms, in chapter 24. Chapter 24 has a very storied history. There's a famous story of a fellow who lived in a place called Lutkia. He was very, very wealthy, and he would have this huge table piled high with food, and he would have many guests at his table, and before he would partake in the food, he would recite chapter 24 of Tillim. Every single time. What is so important about chapter 24? The most powerful verse insofar as this issue is concerned is the words, quote, Lahashem ha'aretz umaloya. To God is the land and its fullness. Everything belongs to God. That was his statement. He made the statement, Lahashem ha'aretz umaloya. Everything belongs to God. Now that I say everything belongs to God, now I can go ahead and eat. So since everything belongs to God, it's like kachem. And since it's kachem, you can't partake of it. You want to partake of it to make a bracha. When you make a bracha, now you can't partake of it. So what's the obvious question? How does making a bracha modify the reality and change it from being in God's possession? If it's in God's possession, and because it's in God's possession, I'm not supposed to eat it. And if I do, I'm mo'el b'kachem shamayim. How does that make a difference? How does that help anybody? At first glance, this doesn't seem to make sense. If we are to say that the material world and its fullness is automatically considered to be kodesh shemayim, it's considered to be holy and sacred, the kind of things which are holy and sacred and therefore asurim ba'anah, therefore are proscribed from us having any kind of benefit. So Kate said, "Mutar lahanus menu." How then is it possible for us to benefit from it? La'achar abracha. So you made a bracha. Very nice. V'chi abracha mafkia es hakedusha. Does making a blessing strip away holiness? Is that what we're saying? This was holy. Because it was holy, it was out of circulation. Out of circulation means you can't partake of it. Ah, but you make a bracha, you strip away the holiness. Really? Making a bracha, invoking Hashem's name, strips holiness? It removes holiness? And if it doesn't remove the holiness, how is making a bracha, how does that enable you to be able to eat from something which you weren't able to eat from before because it was kodesh shemayim, because it was in a different designation, because it was, so to speak, in a different jurisdiction? It's kodesh shemayim. It's owned by God. If it's owned by God, you can't have it because you're not part of God's household. You're not a kohen. So how did making a bracha change that? Lefia halacha, mefia kan, because of kan. According to the halacha we just learned, it makes perfect sense. We said, avdei shel kohen. We said if you're the servant, indentured laborer of the kohen, zakei lechel truma v'kachim, you can eat kachim. Kimoya kohen atzmei, just like the kohen. Why? Are you a kohen? No. Person says, I'm not even really Jewish. I'm only half Jewish. Well, how then are you eating food which a regular Jew is not allowed to eat? Because it's truma. Because it's designated only for kohenim. How are you eating it? What does he answer you? He says, because I'm part of the kohen's household. And because I'm part of the Kohen's household, whatever the Kohen can eat, I can eat too. Ba'amidas ha-bracha. When you say a bracha, my friends, you say, Baruch Ata Hashem Elekeinu Melech Ha'olam. You say, blessed are you, God, the Lord, Master of the whole world. Makir ha'adam b'kach. A person then has a moment of awareness, a moment of spiritual clarity. What's accomplished with a bracha? Not when we mumble the bracha and don't even know what we said. When we actually make the bracha and think about what we're saying. A bracha should better be called in English a meditation than a blessing. That's what it is. So you have this moment, this little thought process. This moment when before you're going to eat and enjoy, you stop, you think, you remember. That what? You remember Lashem Aretz Umloya. You remember the world belongs to God. You say, I have to bless you and I have to acknowledge that you are the master, the king of the universe. Maker b'kach shu'avdish HaKadosh Baruch Hu, oz, then, mutar lehenes afilu mekadesh shamayim. Now you can eat from something, even if it belongs to God. Even if it's considered to be sacred and holy unto heaven. K'shem she'eved kohen, just like the servant of the kohen, is allowed to eat the truma b'kachim. Why? Because he's part of his household. Making a bracha essentially makes you part of God's household. So it belongs to God. But when I make a bracha and I acknowledge that everything belongs to God, it's as if, for that moment, I'm once again in this closeness with God. And when I'm in that close communion, that oneness with God, God's table and my table become one and the same. I'm sitting at God's table. That's why it says, Vayidaber Elayzeh HaShulchan HaShlofnei Hashem. People speak words of Torah, they eat mindfully, it's a table that's before God. But you belong at God's table now. Such, my dear friends, is the power of a bracha. I once read a story that there was a fellow who grew up in Israel and he was not very connected to his Yiddishkeit. Well, he grew up in a quasi-observant home and he was looking for spirituality. He didn't find it in Judaism. Judaism to him was full of rote and full of technicalities. And after his army service, he decided to do what a lot of Israeli kids do. He went off to India. And in India, he ended up, in his quest for spirituality, he entered into one of these monasteries. And he was doing, Hindu practices. And he was enjoying the yoga and the meditation. And once it happened that they sat down to eat, and he was sitting with the Swami or whatever, and he made a bracha, by mistake almost. He somehow, he went back to habit. You make a bracha before you eat. And the Swami interrupted him immediately, said, "What did you just do?" He said, "Nothing. It's whatever, you wouldn't understand." Again, it's a story that I saw. He said, "Whatever, when you recited those words, there was some kind of halo I could see. You created some kind of holiness." He says, "You don't belong here." He says, "Go back to wherever you came from. Keep doing what you were doing because it works. You don't need my spirituality." In other words, for a Yid to do what a Yid is supposed to do Yiddish spirituality, it works. And when we make a bracha, we become close to Hashem. We become gods. When you're gods, then you can eat from the food that God provides because you're gods. And the truth is that a bracha and eating has everything to do with mindfulness. If you stop thinking about the bracha, if you finished eating, you moved on, and then you moved on to a new session. You have to make a new bracha. Or once after bracha is recited, the session ends. So eating is a sacred opportunity. We make a bracha before. In doing so, we become closer to God. And therefore, we're able to partake and enjoy that which is God's bounty. And that's one of the things we can learn from an ancient halacha, which is technically no longer relevant, but the idea resonates with extraordinary clarity in our day and age.
Thank you.